Live and local on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parks III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Pro Football Hall of Famer Ricky Jackson.
I tell you what, man, I was out playing basketball, and a lot of guys came and told me Saints drafted you, and they looking for you. I had forgot all about the draft.
UFC superstar Dustin the Diamond Poirier.
It means everything to me. You know, Lafayette, Louisiana, I was born and raised. I'm a Cajun. I love it. I can't wait to walk to the airport with that dog.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Good morning and welcome to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network, 24 hours of sports coverage. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. If you'd like, you can give us a call today on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. Tonight is NBA draft time. What? Zion Williamson will officially become a member of the New Orleans Pelicans as the Pels are expected to draft the big fella, generational talent out of Duke. What happens with the rest of the draft, and including what the Pels do with that number 4 overall pick? Who knows? Memphis trading Mike Conley Jr. to Utah yesterday for 3 players, a first-round pick this year, and a future first-round pick pretty much prevents New Orleans from moving up from 4 to 2. That tells you that Memphis is locked in and getting Ja Morant as their point guard of the future. And they'll take the young man out of Murray State with the number 2 overall pick. And more than likely, you'll see the Knicks take R.J. Barrett at 3. Unless they do something completely moronic, or rather what they do as the New York Knicks. So really, we're entering in tonight's NBA draft festivities with 1, 2, 3 pretty much going as with not a lot of juice, right? Not a lot of excitement. We kind of anticipate what's going to happen at picks 1, 2, and 3, and then all the craziness will come afterwards, starting with what New Orleans will do via Los Angeles at number 4. What's going to happen then? Are they going to trade? Are they going to trade it away for a player? Are they going to trade it away to get more picks? Maybe player and picks. Or maybe they just sit tight and they take a guy that they really like. Be plenty of intrigue there starting at pick number 4 and going through the rest of the draft lottery, because you have a lot of teams who are wanting to try to move up. Some will be wanting to move down. There'll be a flurry of activity tonight. For sure. But Zion is the star of this draft class right now. He's the guy with the big personality. He's going to be the number 1 overall pick. Pels fans are extremely excited about him coming to them and becoming the face of the franchise. And this is what the young man, the freshman power forward out of Duke, told reporters yesterday during the draft media session there in New York City about becoming the face of the franchise down in New Orleans.
Gosh, who said that? I'd be the face. I think I'd be ready because I just love this game and I'm a competitor. Whatever I'm doing, I want to win. I think the same for the players that are already there.
Sounds like he's ready to take on that challenge. Zion was asked a plethora of questions yesterday. And this is what he had to say about who his role models were in the association.
I mean, gosh, I'm not going to view him as a role model when I get there, but people have respect for LeBron. Since day one, he had the highest expectations, and he's exceeded all of them, on and off the court. Russell Westbrook, I love the tenacity he brings, and Kawhi Leonard, because he don't say much, he just handles his business and just goes on about his day, and I respect that so much.
Those three guys. Cody, can you play that clip one more time?
I mean, gosh, I'm not going to view him as a role model when I get there, but people have respect for LeBron. Since day one, he had the highest expectations, and he's exceeded all of them on and off the court. Russell Westbrook, I love the tenacity he brings, and Kawhi Leonard, because he don't say much, he just handles his business and just goes on about his day, and I respect that so much.
I want to dissect a few of those things. I love what he starts off saying. They won't be role models when I get to the league. They were his role models, but when he gets to the league, he's not going to be starstruck, which is nice. Remember back in the day when Shaq got into the league as a rookie for the Orlando Magic and he tried to get an autograph from Michael Jordan, like right before a game? Okay. You don't want to do that because now you have already given an advantage to your competition. And a guy like Jordan will use that to his advantage. The three guys that he mentioned, LeBron, considered the long time, a generational talent, the best player on the planet, a guy who had enormous expectations placed on him since the age of 15 and lived up to all those expectations. Russell Westbrook, chip on his shoulder. Is there a guy who plays with more passion and anger and determination in the NBA than Russell Westbrook? And then he mentioned Kawhi Leonard, the silent assassin, the guy that goes about doing his business. Those are three guys that I'm really happy that those are the guys that Zion wants to kind of be. The competitive drive of Russell Westbrook, dealing with the expectations and the mental fortitude of LeBron, and just going about his business and not being all about him. That's what Kawhi represents. I love the fact that those are the three guys that he mentioned, and that they won't be his role models as soon as he gets into the league. That's terrific. This is what Zion had to say about how he stays humble, how he stays grounded through this whole process and all the hype of being the number one overall pick.
There were times when this wasn't here. There were no interviews. There were no fans. Gym was empty. Actually, it wasn't even a gym. It was an outdoor court with me and my stepdad. I just think back to those times when it was just me, my stepdad.
You got to love that, right? You got to love that he still remembers when there's no one around wanting to interview him and that there was no one around that thought he was relevant. Now, of course, he's been, you know, relevant since he came out of high school as one of the top five prospects in the country and then goes to Duke. And, well, hello, you start as a freshman for Duke, you're going to be a big deal. But the fact that he still remembers that time there practicing, developing his game on outside courts with his stepdad. And that's what he went to. And that's where his mind's at. Love that. Love that mentality. Love that mindset for the young man who's about to become the face of a franchise. You know, Zion has played for Coach K there at Duke. He's had AAU coaches. He's had high school coaches. He's had people that have probably pushed him to work harder, to work out more, to develop, you know, to build up weight mass, to work on his conditioning, to work on his jump shot, to work on boxing out. He's probably had a lot of men in the course of the last 10 years harp on him, push him. But Zion told us all yesterday that the best coach he's ever had wasn't a man at all. It was his mama.
I stand by this till this day. She was the hardest coach I ever had. Don't let that mom word, like, fool y'all. Like, we'd be in the car riding back home after my middle school games. My stepdad would be like, yeah, that was a great game. Like, my mom'd be like, what? Good game. You missed the pass there. You didn't shoot it there. Her being my biggest critic was the best thing for me, actually.
So Zion's mama gave him hell. Made sure that he stayed humble. Made sure that he never got too big of a head, right? That's a good mama right there. But I like that. Don't let the mom word fool you. She was my biggest credit. Love that. Zion was also asked, in a fun way, what is his first meal down in New Orleans known for its cuisine? Worldwide known for its cuisine. He was asked what his first meal is going to be once he arrives in New Orleans.
The city was just very welcoming. Like, everywhere I went, it was just like walking on the street. It was just people, you know, high-fiving me, saying they hope I come here to go into, I think the food place was called Commander's.
Commander's.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been seeing some of people saying, I got like, chicken tenders. No, that was my five-year-old brother did that.
So he was talking about when he came and they worked him out and they took him out. They took him out to Commander's Palace and reports where he's got some chicken tenders. I love how he said that. No, that was what my little brother ate. He says all the right things for being such a... He's only 19, right? So... He's saying all the right things. He's embracing becoming part of New Orleans and part of the culture there. And here's the thing, right? If you want to be part of New Orleans culture, want to be part of the Louisiana culture, you want to be part of the Gulf Coast, or is what they used to call it back in the day, the Third Coast. If you want to be part of that, if you want to rep that, and you're genuine about it, New Orleans, Louisiana, and the Third Coast will embrace you and love you like you are one of their own. And the only thing Zion's got to do is look at the team that plays across from the Smoothie King Center. Drew Brees is a kid from Texas who went to the Big Ten and played football at Purdue. And started his career in San Diego. Yet he came to New Orleans, embraced the culture, embraced the city, and they love him. And obviously he's a winner, and that goes a long way. That goes without saying. But look at all these other younger guys on the Saints squad. Michael Thomas went to Ohio State. Alvin Kamara, not from New Orleans, okay? College, Alabama, Tennessee. All these guys embraced the culture, embraced the food, embraced the music, embraced the history. New Orleans will welcome you with open arms and will love you until the day that you die and afterwards, as long as you stay true to them. You love them back, New Orleans, Louisiana, and the Gulf Coast will love you just as much. And I think Anthony Davis forgot that. I think he forgot that. And those folks down there and throughout the state, including up here for us and the Gulf Coast, want the Pels to be good. We want to root for the Pels. And if this young man is fully on board and wants to embrace being part of the culture here and wants to rep New Orleans and the state of Louisiana, we're all for it, man. They want this. The city wants this. The state wants this. The coast wants this. And Zion, when he takes the stage tonight and puts on that Pels hat, if he just loves the city back and just plays well, we will ride with him until the wheels fall off. AD forgot about that. Gotta move. Gotta keep it moving. We're going to stay in New Orleans, though. The Beer Man movie is coming. What? That's right. Do they need extras? Cody and I will explore. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company, right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Russell simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. If you'd like, you can give us a call on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. We led off today's show talking about Zion Williamson. He met with members of the media yesterday there in New York for the draft, answered a slew of questions, and basically he gave all the right answers. Who his role models are, the fact that his mama was his best coach, his toughest critic. Talked about his first meal in New Orleans, about becoming face of the franchise, the whole nine yards. Can't wait to see that young man in a Pelicans jersey. We'll stay in the Crescent City. Reports came out yesterday that one of the most beloved Saints players, a man who's in the Saints Hall of Fame, Michael Lewis, the Beer Man. Apparently, they're going to make a movie about his life.
As they should. As they indeed should.
It seems like this should have already happened, though, right? It seems a little weird. Like,
My question to you about it is, what level of movie are we talking here? Are we talking blockbuster-type movie? Are we talking Netflix movie? That's still respectable as hell. Hulu? Are we talking one of the streaming straight movies? Or are we talking like straight to DVD?
Or are we talking like New
Lifetime
Film Festival?
Or exactly, or are we talking a film festival? Like,
well, here's to help answer that question.
I'm really glad you can.
So the famous Saints punt return man, Michael Lewis, maybe getting the Hollywood treatment. Mike Scott of the Times-Picayune was the first to report that Lewis recently approved a film treatment, which is essentially, it's not a full-blown script, okay? It's just a treatment. I think of it as just like the bones of a story. A film treatment of his path to the NFL, which would be written and directed by David Dubois, a New Orleans local. They already have some material to work with, because in 2014, Lewis published his autobiography titled Dreams, The Michael Lewis Story. Now, it's a great story. He needed to provide for his family, so instead of going to college, he got a job and then famously became a Budweiser delivery truck driver, thus the nickname Beer Man. But then he would finally find his way to semi-pro leagues and then eventual success with the Saints. Now, Lewis's agent, Carl Bernard, talked about all the great potential that this story has. He points to Rudy as being a timeless sports movie about someone who ultimately was on the field for just three plays. And then Mark Wahlberg, his movie Invincible, about former Philadelphia Eagle Vince Papale, who got a roster spot by winning a tryout, famously. Lewis owns plenty of the Saints, still owns plenty of the Saints records. Here's the problem. Invincible had Walt Disney Pictures behind it and the money to get someone like Mark Wahlberg in that role. Rudy had a major studio behind it.
Chadwick Boseman is not going to be playing Michael Lewis. He's like the big actor right now.
Right.
He's like the new Don Cheadle, Denzel Washington.
And he's played enough historical figures as it is, right? He's already done Jackie Robinson.
Right. He's
James Brown.
Martin Luther King. Didn't he do that? Wasn't he the guy in Selma?
No.
No, that wasn't him? That was a different guy?
That was a different guy.
Okay, fair enough.
But still, he's played a ton of historical figures.
Right.
and now he's in the Marvel Universe, so he may not have time to do the Little Bear Man movie. So there's still a lot of questions to be asked and to have answered. Who's going to finance this? Who's going to come bankroll this? Are they going to get a major studio? Are they going to get even someone like, well, Netflix is a major studio now.
At this point, yeah.
Yes. Or is this going to be just a passion project? Or should this, instead of being a full-length feature, shouldn't this just become like a documentary? Like a 30 for 30? That would probably be easier to put together and get out there. I don't know. I mean, his story lends itself to becoming...
Oh, wait, we forget Chadwick Boseman was in Draft Day. So confirmed.
Oh, that's right. He was the Ohio State.
Confirmed
linebacker.
He'll be Michael Lewis in the Beer Man movie.
He also played Jackie Robinson.
He played Thurgood Marshall as well, another historical figure. So just some stuff out there.
Yeah, Chadwick was like locking up all those historical. He's like, yeah, I'll play them all. So, yeah, they want Chadwick Boseman. Instead, they'll get Chadwick Boseman.
They'll get Badwick Choseman.
Yes. I don't know. There's no financing involved in this. Maybe they can get Gail Benson and the Saints to pony up some dough to get this project off the ground.
You'd think like Coors Light would be all over this.
Or it was Budweiser. So you,
I'm just a Coors Light guy, that's all.
Well, you're a Coors Light guy, but Budweiser was actually what he drove for.
Right.
So you would think Budweiser would be like, oh, hell yeah. Here's $1 million.
We'll throw a few Clydesdales in the movie. It'll be fine. A good time for everybody.
And I know he probably has a relationship with David Dubois. I don't know who that is. I mean, he's based out of New Orleans. I don't know if he has if he's a noted filmmaker or not.
The important question is, oh no.
Yeah, I did a search of David Dubois. Screenwriter came up.
Right.
It appears that he wrote Leprechaun 3.
Oh, well, they can't all be winners, Raymond. Can't all be winners. The real question is, this is what the people want to know. Will you see the movie?
Oh, yeah, that's all that matters. I'll see the movie.
That's all that matters.
I mean, because it's a great story, right?
And it's one of those things you feel like you know the story, but then you hope that there's stuff about the story that you don't know, and then it's even more fun, you know?
Yes.
Biopics are becoming the new hotness.
Yes, he wrote the straight-to-video Leprechaun 3 back in the day. We got to hit a break. When we come back, we'll talk to John Marques of The Town Talk and thetowntalk.com right here on RP3 and Company on Acadiana's Sports Station 103.7. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana's Sports Station. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. It's time now for us to head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline and welcome on our first guest of the day. He joins us every Thursday morning. He is the award-winning columnist for The Town Talk and thetowntalk.com. He's our good friend, John Marques. John, how you doing this morning?
Doing well, right? How about you?
Doing great. I want to get to your latest column because I found it to be fascinating and a subject that I think people throughout the state can relate to. There's the situation involving Lafayette Christian Academy right now that is yet to be resolved about having volunteer coaches serve as in the head coaching capacity, a decision of the appeal process. We're still waiting to find out about that concerning LCA and multiple coaches over there. And you brought up a coach at a public school in northeast Louisiana, an icon, a legend, a Hall of Famer, that this has affected as well. So I want to get to that later, John, but I want to start off with your thoughts about tonight's NBA draft. Zion, we know, is going to go number one overall. It looks like Memphis, with trading Mike Conley over to Utah, that they're going to probably take Ja Morant at number two. And unless the Knicks do well, unless the Knicks decide to be themselves, they should take R.J. Barrett at three, which then the craziness will begin starting at pick number four, because that is the pick that New Orleans got in the Anthony Davis trade. How do you see things kind of going out maybe with the Pels? Do you see them keeping that pick, taking a player, maybe trading him, trying to get a veteran player? You've covered the league long enough. What do you think you think's going to happen?
You know, I can see it both ways of them wanting to trade the pick, maybe try to get an established star. And if they can piece things together, I've seen maybe they offer the number four pick and Ball and Brandon Ingram for Bradley Beal. I mean, if they can do that, I think that makes a lot of sense. But then again, there's also the, you know, there's a good valid point that, you know, Dell Demps tried to trade away all their draft picks to bring in established players to help speed along the building process with Anthony Davis, and we see how that ended. Then maybe they keep the pick. They draft the guard from Texas Tech and, you know, try to build complementary players around Zion and let Jrue be the veteran who, I mean, he's still in his 20s. I mean, it's not like he's LeBron and in his mid-30s and near the end of his career. So maybe you do build a solid foundation around Zion of, guess what, players who are similar age and let them grow together. You know, that's a novel concept for the New Orleans Pelicans of the last 7-8 years. I actually remember when they used to do that, and guess what? They had success. So, you know, I think if they can package things and they can bring in a Bradley Beal, you go do that. If not, I don't think there's anything wrong with just slowly building. And you know, the key to their future, no matter what anybody says, is going to be those other two first-round picks they get from the Lakers, because at some point LeBron is going to have to retire. He's going to decline. And I also think the Lakers' fortunes are going to decline with him. I mean, there's nothing that says the Lakers are going to be the Lakers of the 70s or the 80s or even the 90s. They are going to start declining. And when that happens, those draft picks that, you know, I can't remember the years, but I think they're 4 and 5 years down the road, they're going to be valuable commodities. So, you know, the future is bright for the Pelicans. And, you know, if whatever they do with that number four pick, you know, is not going to determine the outcome of the franchise. I think what's going to determine the outcome of the franchise is what happens really in the next 2 to 3 years.
We're talking with John Marques of the Town Talk and the TownTalk.com here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. John, they could also, while they sit there at four, there's a lot of other teams. Phoenix has expressed interest. We know Atlanta tried to trade the number 8 and the number 10 overall picks, their two lottery picks, up to the Knicks to get to number 3. That could also be another option. If you're talking about maybe not having generational all-star talent, but you could trade down and get two more lottery picks, and now you have two additional younger pieces that you can build around. And maybe one of those guys turns into an all-star. I mean, we've seen lower-drafted players in the lottery or right outside of the lottery, Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green. The Golden State Warriors built an entire dynasty off guys who were not high draft picks. So, and Kawhi Leonard is another one, right? So you can find other guys. So if you got Zion and you got Jrue and you got your pieces from the Lakers, Josh Hart, Alonzo Ball, Brandon Ingram, and if you can trade with Atlanta and get two more rookies, you know, two more guys under the age of 23, you know, you're going to take your lumps because you're going to be a young club, a young team, but, you know, that could be a big, that could be a huge step moving forward for this franchise.
Yeah, you know, everything pointed to them, you know, after the trade was announced on Saturday that, hey, the Pelicans aren't done. They're looking to swap the number four pick from more assets. And, you know, and the thing that is sort of baffling about this draft is you have the clear top three picks in whatever order. But then after that, it sort of declines rapidly. So I don't know if the number four pick is as valuable as it might be in other years, but then again, why wouldn't you? If you could have an opportunity to move down and get more assets, I think, you know, you do that. Maybe you take the page out of the Bill Belichick draft where, you know, it's not the quality of the pick, but it's the quantity of the picks. And that this draft sort of seems like it's more of a quantity than it is quality. You know, you've got Zion, you got Jay Morant, you got Reddish, if those are your top three, you know, maybe you need to slide down some more and see what else you can use to build. You know, and I mean, and you know, you look at some of the young stars in the NBA, a lot of them you never would have projected to be as good as they are. I mean, you know, look at Donovan Mitchell of the Jazz. You know, he wasn't highly talented coming out of Louisville. You know, he had a decent last year for the Cardinals, but nobody could expect of what he became. And, you know, with the trade that the Jazz made yesterday for Mike Conley, you know, I would put the Jazz having a better prospects for next season than I would the Lakers. You know, everybody's now said the Lakers are going to win the NBA title.
Well, the Lakers technically can't even afford to offer another max contract because of the trade with the Pels. Now they're trying to find a third partner to dump off other guys to trade for second round picks to free up enough cap space to be able to sign another max contract. How good? How much did Griffin fleece Rob Pelinka and the Lakers, John?
I mean, it's just, and two, it may not be over with because now they're coming back trying to get some more, you know, as you said, cap space available. You know, and, you know, everything changed with the NBA draft lottery when the Pelicans got number one and the Lakers somehow jumped up and got number four. You know, that changed everything. And, you know, and the thing that really has changed is because, you know, let's face it, the wild card in all the trade was Lonzo Ball. You know, you heard 3 months ago there's no way in heck that, you know, he wanted to play in New Orleans. Well, now I think his dad and his family's realized maybe it's not so bad playing with Zion, and you're still going to play with Brandon Ingram. You got Jrue Holiday, who went to UCLA. So that's sort of the UCLA family there with the Ball family. So, you know, it's just, you know, it's just, I mean, I can't tell you as a Pelicans follower, as a Pelicans fans, going back from the first draft pick they had when they were the Charlotte Hornets and they took Rex Chapman, that, you know, if you're looking at the long-term prognosis of the franchise, this has got to be the best it's ever been, even when they drafted Anthony Davis.
We're talking with John Marques of the Town Talk and the TownTalk.com right here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. John, I want to switch over from the association to high schools, and you wrote a terrific column about legendary coach Dee Faircloth there at Vidalia High School. And this is a man who racked up hundreds of wins, made Vidalia one of the best teams in the state, was forced to retire because he was battling prostate cancer, fought it, beat it, came back as an assistant coach at the school where the field and the stadium is named after him. And then when the program went down, he took over again as head coach, but now he's been ousted and he's been forced to quit based on what the state has done. Can you give us further details on what you wrote in your piece?
Yeah, you know, this is a man who he's one of the top 20 all-time winningest football coaches in state's history, and I think he was sixth after last season. And, you know, he's just an institution. He came to Vidalia in 1968, served 1 year as an assistant coach, became the head coach the next year. And had he not had to battle prostate cancer, he'd probably still be the head coach. There would have been no interruption, but he had to step away. And he, you know, when he stepped away, the fortunes of the program immediately cratered. He came back. I think the 6 or 7 years he was not the head coach, they won a total of 10 games. The last 2 years, they've won 9 games each, and they went to the state quarterfinals last year. I mean, he's just – and as good of a coach as he is, and you've had dealings with him, he's just right. A better person. I mean, he's just one of those prototypical, great, small-town high school football coaches that, you know, kids these days need. And, that he was promoted back to head coach in 2016. And shortly after he was promoted back to head coach at LHSA, Hamilton Christian sponsored an amendment to the bylaws that, hey, all right, we can have non-faculty head coaches in all these sports except for football and boys and girls basketball. And originally it was from those to add volleyball in there. And I don't know why volleyball was removed, why it was considered in the first place. I don't know why football and the basketball programs are singled out. And, you know, if Dee Fairclough was a tennis coach at Vidalia, he'd still be the tennis coach. Unfortunately, he's not. The thing passed in 2017, and back in April, I guess the LHSA decided to actually enforce the rule. And May 24th, Eddie Bonine sent out a memo to all the schools saying, and he sealed out, there were four that had, you know, non-faculty head coaches in these positions or retired coaches, and one of them was Dee Fairclough. And about a week later, he unwillingly, but he knew he had to, he resigned, which, you know, it just flies in the face of everything that the Louisiana High School Athletic Association should be about.
John, so you don't have an issue then with non-faculty personnel serving as head coaches for football and basketball then?
I don't understand why, if you're going to allow it in baseball or track or some of these other sports, why you don't allow it in the other sports. I mean, why are you singling these out? And I sort of, and here's the thing that I couldn't understand why the association split the select and non-select and all the public schools up and get arms against recruiting. You know, some of the biggest recruiters in this state were public schools. I mean, the biggest recruiting scandal in the state's history was in Bastrop, where they went around the state picking up Katrina, you know, evacuees and bringing them to Bastrop. You know, it wasn't a private school. And in this, you know, and some of these small communities, especially when they're poor, Vidalia is a poor area, you know, it's hard to attract quality coaches, quality teachers. And, you know, it's not like they're bringing in, you know, a ringer from, you know, this is Dee Fairclough. He'd already spent 40 years as the head football coach there. You can't apply a one-size-fits-all to every school in the LHSA, and I think some people have tried to do that too much.
And my other question would be, and we're talking with John Marquez here of the Town Talk and the TownTalk.com on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. My other question, John, is why are we enforcing this now?
That's a good question. And why wasn't he grandfathered in? Because he was already back being a head coach, and then the amendment passed. That's, you know, and I've asked a couple of attorneys who I know well. I said, and they all agree he would probably have a very good lawsuit against the LHSA for age discrimination and, you know, and some other things. And, you know, it's just, once again, you know, the Louisiana High School Athletic Association should be about kids. It should be about the players. And it's becoming more and more about the adults. And as we've seen time and time again over the last 10 years, the adults don't know what they're doing.
That may be one of the best things you've ever said on the program, John. John, appreciate you coming on, making time for us as always. Enjoy your weekend. Enjoy tonight's draft. I'm sure there'll be, I don't know, what, 17 Kentucky Wildcats that'll be drafted, and 12 of those won't even have played a minute last year?
No, we only got three. They're going to be drafted, which means most of them are coming back to school for next year. It's a strange phenomenon.
Well, enjoy yourself, brother, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right. Same to you, Ray.
John Marquez from Town Talk and thetowntalk.com. Joining us here on RP3 and Company. When we come back, we'll close out hour number one right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana Sports Station. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1 and on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. Going to close out the first hour here of today's show with some sad news to report on. Two instances across the state that we need to tell you about. Last night, down in the New Orleans area, an Amite High School football player died after practice. The Amite Police Department said it received a call around 9 p.m. and about emergency at the school, according to the report. When officers arrived, firefighters and EMTs were administrating CPR to
to the young man. The teen died before arriving at a hospital. His name is Terrence Allen. He was only 15 years old. No reports yet, no updates yet on what happened. Why did he die there after practice had wrapped up down there in New Orleans? So sad news, and prayers go out to his family and the Amite High School family as well.
That's scary. I only played high school football my freshman year, but in my freshman year during one of the JV games, another guy on my team went to the same school as me. He's a freshman, same class. In the middle of the game, it was right after halftime or something, just collapsed in the middle of the field, and they had to fly a helicopter onto the field, and they had to airlift him out to take care. I mean, he ended up being okay, but you know, situation, that's terrifying.
And so many of these times, we find out later because we've had this has become more frequent in recent years, whether it's at the high school level or the college level. It's a lot of times we find that these players had enlarged hearts.
Some sort of condition.
Some type of condition that was never diagnosed and no one ever knew anything about.
Right.
And their body was unable to handle what occurred. Also, sad news affecting the Grambling State football program. This happens early this morning. This was reported on first by Corey Diaz from the News Star that a Grambling State football player was shot. His brother was killed in New Orleans. The News Star is reporting that Grambling State football player Daryl Clark and his younger brother were shot late Wednesday night in New Orleans. Clark's younger brother was fatally wounded, while Clark, a rising senior wide receiver for the Tigers, was reported to be in quote-unquote stable condition following surgery. Grambling tight ends coach Daryl Kitchen confirmed the report early Thursday morning. So, terrible news involving a high school player who's lost his life down there at Amite High School following a practice, and then a Grambling State football player being shot and his younger brother being shot and killed late Wednesday night, early Thursday morning down in New Orleans. So prayers go out to those families affected by those tragedies. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, hour number two, we'll talk about Josh Hart, recently traded from the Los Angeles Lakers, embracing everything New Orleans, right here on 103.7 The Game.
Live and local, we are Acadiana's sports station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. LSU All-American Skylar Green.
You know, as a young athlete growing up, you always want to do the game-winning something, the game-winning shot, game-winning catch. And I thought the biggest part for me right there, that Georgia catch, that solidifying everybody seeing that LSU for real.
Ridge and Cajun hoop star Elfrid Payton.
It's exciting to be able to represent, you know, your city, and, you know, somewhere where you grew up at and put that jersey on, see that says New Orleans on the front of it. I think it means a lot.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Welcome to hour number two of RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana Sports Station. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. If you'd like, you can give us a call on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. Just be kind to Cody, and he may put you on the air. But if you decide to get mouthy with Mr. Schutz, don't mistake Cody's kindness for weakness. That will be a mistake. Just saying. We let off today. Sorry, go ahead.
You're putting me on a pedestal here, Raymond. I don't know what to do with that.
We let off today's show talking about Zion Williamson. Meeting with the media yesterday, he is the projected number one overall pick that the Pelicans will draft tonight during the NBA draft. The former Duke star. And very impressed with his answers, who his role models are, the fact that the hardest coach, his best coach, was his mama. That he's ready to be the face of the franchise. that he's ready to embrace New Orleans, and he seems like a good, humble kid. Most of those guys that come through Duke and play for Coach K usually are. That's usually a trait, 9 times out of 10. I mean, there's been some exceptions. Kyrie Irving, not really humble. Christian Laettner, no, there was nothing. That man lacked humility. But a lot of the guys that come through Duke tend to be kind of stand-up guys. We talked about that. We talked about the beer man looking to get a movie made about his life. I'm going to say it. Don't hold your breath. I did a little research on the gentleman who's attached to write and direct the beer man story. He wrote Leprechaun 3 back in the day. One of his most recent projects that he wrote and directed was a horror movie called Bayou Tales, which wrapped up production, and they had a teaser trailer made in 2011, but yet was not released in any form, not a theater, was not released in theaters, until this year. I watched the teaser trailer during the break. I do not have high hopes that the Beer Man movie will be made. That's all I'm going to say about that. If you want to see the Beer Man movie made, then someone needs to tell the Beer Man to get someone else to help make his movie. I'd let that guy who wrote and directed Bayou Tales, I'd let him be in charge of the craft service table. And that would be all. You stay there. Don't need any of that wisdom that you earned from Leprechaun 3 coming and telling the inspirational story of the Beer Man. We also talked with John Marcase, award-winning columnist from the Town Talk and the TownTalk.com, about the draft, about the Anthony Davis trade, and also about the Louisiana High School Athletic Association making the decision to have volunteer coaches no longer serve as head coaches for sports, football, and basketball. That affects multiple schools throughout the state. John wrote about how it affects a legendary coach in Dee Faircloth there at Vidalia High School. But it also affects us directly locally here in Acadiana with LCA, Lafayette Christian Academy. They have multiple coaches that are volunteer coaches in those sports. They still are awaiting to find out the results of their appeal on this decision from the state. We've yet to hear anything. We were supposed to hear something last week. It's Thursday of this week, and still nothing. So we'll keep an eye on that situation and see when news breaks on that. But I want to lead off this hour talking about who should be your new favorite Pelican player not named Zion Williamson. And it's Josh Hart. Oh, yeah. It's one of the Lakers. I'm going to tell you why it's one of the Lakers. This guy, from the moment he found out that he was being traded from La La Land with Brandon Ingram and Lonzo Ball and was coming to New Orleans, he has embraced being a New Orleans Pelican. This cat wants to play for the franchise. Yesterday, he ordered him some new slides, some new sandals. NOLA. They got NOLA written on them, Mardi Gras colors. He's tweeting about Raising Cane's. They got a Raising Cane's in NOLA. What I've been missing for a while. Like, he's just happy. He's just happy to be here playing for the Pels. Remember, he wore Pels t-shirt. What was it? The night after he got traded. Like, he went to a Fortnite tournament, which I'm not really for sure what that is. Cody will explain it to me.
Video games.
So it's like a role-playing video game?
No, not at all. It's a shooter.
It's a shooter game.
It's a shooter.
I can get behind that.
So like a mass multiplayer online type thing. You get dropped into these fights and it's you and like 100 other people. And there's different modes. But yeah, it's like Call of Duty, except more cartoony, less realistic.
Okay. I'm with you. Oh, okay.
All the kids think it's lit.
All the kids think it's lit, do they?
They do. You know that floss dance that everybody's doing and all the thing? That all comes from Fortnite. Just be glad you have a girl.
Yeah, because that's not, you know, Disney princesses and dancing and everything else. No, no, no. But Josh Hart has really embraced New Orleans. He's all on board. And I've said it before, of the three pieces that they got from the Lakers, I like Josh Hart the most because I think he's the most versatile. Now, is he going to be an all-star? No. Is he a good combo guard that can be a guy that come off the bench for this franchise and give Drew a rest and maybe Lonzo Ball or whoever's going to be playing the point? Absolutely. But he's embraced the culture. He was already wearing the Pelican shirt right off the bat. Like, gets traded and is like, I'm down. I'm with it. I'm all about being here. I'm all about being part of this culture. Wearing NOLA gear. Repping the area. And he just wants it. I mean, this is what he's done. He immediately started repping the Pelicans in his Twitter bio, wardrobe, and etc. He asked on Twitter where to find the best beignets in New Orleans. He's got some humor with a Russell Westbrook reaction gif. He invited Wale to a game. He's got NOLA Mardi Gras sandals ordered, wearing, and he's pumped up about Raising Cane's. This guy's checking all the boxes, right? This guy wants to be here, man, and he wants to be. Now, whether or not he's going to be a great player, who knows? I think he has talented. I think he's a talented player. I think he's a good two-way player. Alvin Gentry's going to want to preach defense, and I think Josh Hart can provide that. He needs to improve as a shooter. His offensive game is not nearly where it needs to be, but he's still young. He's a very young player. And Marques mentioned it when he was on about just surrounding a core around Zion, that Drew Holiday's still in his 20s, but he's going to be the old man on this team. That's not necessarily a bad thing, that you let these guys kind of develop, grow, mature, blossom together, and then you can have something together. Once again, I'm not making the same comparison, but did you think when Golden State put together their roster, this is before Steve Kerr was the head coach, this is when Mark Jackson was the head coach, when they took Steph Curry, a flyer on Steph Curry coming out of Davidson, or when they drafted Klay Thompson, and when they took Draymond Green in the second round, do you think in their wildest dreams when they orchestrated that, they're like, three titles in 5 years, five straight finals with this group right here. That's what's going to happen. No. They were hopeful. They're like, maybe Steph can turn into something. Remember, Steph needed a couple years. He struggled. He had the injuries, particularly the ankles. Klay Thompson had a rough rookie season. Draymond Green needed a couple years to become what he became. But the Golden State Warriors invested the time, the assets, and developed their talent. And let those young pieces blossom. That kind of feels like what the Pels are trying to do here. Drew Holiday will be the old man. You draft Zion. You get Lonzo Ball, Brandon Ingram, Josh Hart. These are three guys under the age of 23. Zion is only 19. Drew Holiday still in his 20s. And let's say you stay pat at number 4 or you trade with Atlanta and get the number 8 and number 10 picks this year. Well, now you're even adding even more young talent to the mix. If they don't go out and get a veteran guy, let's say they don't go out and sign a Chris Middleton, who, by the way, decided to become an unrestricted free agent. He's leaving Milwaukee. Or don't go out and make a splash and get an Al Horford and spend a lot of money buying the vets. That's what Demps would have done. Let's say you just go young. You just go with your youth. You trade out Solomon Hill, too. Get an asset. Plus, you got more first-round picks coming. It's okay to have a youth movement. the way Demps tried to build this roster for all those years, he had a generational talent in Anthony Davis. He had a very good two-way player in Drew Holiday, which, by the way, they did not draft. Drew began his career with the Philadelphia 76ers. But Demps was constantly trying to add free agent, free agent, free agent, free agent, give up picks, free agent, free agent, free agent. It never worked. It just never worked. Why not take this approach of building just through the draft? Not saying that what New Orleans is going to do is going to end up what Golden State ended up with. Absolutely not. But why not try the approach, what Golden State's done, what Philadelphia is trying to do, what Boston to a certain degree has tried to do at times. Why not try that? But big up to Josh Hart. Love him. He's embracing the culture. He wants to be a Pelican. And damn it, we want guys that want to be a Pelican. That's something to be excited about. Let's head out to the Arco Equipment Hotline. Welcome on, Doug, to the show. Doug, how are you this morning, brother?
Hey, Ray. Hey, listen, man. I kind of like your idea of Barrett falling into the Pelicans' lap. I'm not a big basketball fan. I'm really not. But I watched some of the games, the NCAA tournament, because the Tigers were in it.
Right.
And I did watch some Duke games, a couple of Duke games. I watched that game that they almost lost. I believe it was to Auburn, or I can't remember who it was. They almost lost the game. But I watched Williamson, Zion, and Barrett play together. And those two dudes are a force to be reckoned with. The Pelicans could land Barrett. I don't know if it would be too much youngness on the team. But Zion and Barrett, man, those two guys, those are some dudes, man. They really are. And if the Pelicans can land him, hey, man, they're building for the future, you know?
I appreciate the call, Doug, and I agree. If they could somehow pull that off and get both Zion and R.J. Barrett there.
I'm the dude.
And I think what you're going to see tonight is the Pels are going to wait. They're going to see Memphis take Morant at number two. And they're going to see what the Knicks do. The Knicks have already turned down a couple of trade offers with people trying to trade up to get to the number three spot to get R.J. Barrett. Now, they just worked out the Vanderbilt guard. But reports are coming out that they still favor R.J. Barrett. But if you can always count on someone to screw it up with who they pick in the NBA draft, it's going to be the New York Knicks. Would the Knicks be so boneheaded not to take R.J. Barrett? And if that happens, he just simply falls to the Pels at number four? Well, then they're not trading that number four pick for multiple picks. They're going to take R.J. Barrett and add him to the mix as well. So, intriguing options are available for the New Orleans Pelicans and Vice President of Basketball Operations, David Griffin. We got to hit a break. When we come back here, talk a little Houston Astros baseball. They've lost four in a row now. Time to worry? We'll talk about it right here on Acadiana Sports Station. 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to the show here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. You can also catch us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. Before we get to baseball talk, hey, go to the 103.7 The Game website, 103.7thegame.com. We got our new poll question up there on the homepage. Okay? It's all about if Josh Hart,
right,
the former Villanova Wildcat, national champion, and lover of all things New Orleans now, should become your new favorite New Orleans Pelicans player. I think he should be. But you can go vote.
Very simple. One click. You'll find it, like Raymond said, right there on the homepage, 103.7 The Game, on the right side in that little sidebar there. You can't miss it. Very simple poll question. We would love to know how much you love Josh Hart. Or maybe you don't. That's what the poll's for.
Maybe you think he's posing. I don't know. Let us know. But now it's time for some Houston Astros baseball. And this is how the game ended yesterday. Day baseball right here. You heard it on 103.7 The Game. But the Astros ended up losing their fourth straight. This is how it happened.
Two outs for Jesse Winker, who's 2-for-3 with a couple of singles and a walk. Osuna suffering his third blown save of the season. Hesitation on a leg kick. Now the pitch, ground ball right side. Altuve dives, can't get it. It's in the right center, around third. Sinzel, the throw to the plate by Reddick is not in time. Sinzel scores, and the Reds win it on a walk-off, 3-2. Jesse Winker mobbed by second base as the Reds sweep this three-game series, all three wins by one run. Astros suffer their first four-game losing streak of the year.
Robert Ford, the voice of the Houston Astros on the play-by-play there. Astros lose four straight for the first time this season. Started off with the 12-0 loss to the Blue Jays there at Minute Maid on Sunday, and then they lost all three games to a below 500 Cincinnati Reds team. Gerrit Cole pitched well yesterday, went six innings, gave up six hits, only one run, struck out eight. Will Harris, the former LSU player, star, came in. He did well. Scoreless inning of relief work. Ryan Pressly, scoreless inning of relief work. And then Roberto came in and blew yet another save. He only pitched two-thirds, gave up three hits, and the game-winning run. Jose Altuve was back in the lineup for the first time in a long time. He's going to be shaking off the rust for a while. I'm just letting everyone know that right now. He was 0-for-4. It'll take him a little while to get back into the groove. Not a lot of hits for the Stros, with the exception of Michael Brantley, who went 3-for-4, drove in two runs, had three hits, as I stated. But besides him, you had Yuli get a hit, Tyler White got a hit, Tony Kemp, a pinch hitter, got a hit, and Bregman got one. That was it. The Reds racked up 11 hits, only scored the three runs, but they scored the two there in the bottom of the ninth. And now it's four straight. The Astros are still 48-27 overall. But they've lost four straight. So is it time to panic? No. These lulls happen throughout a season. They always do. You're just going to have lulls in the season where you just play bad baseball. You can't hit and you can't pitch. And that's what happened yesterday. They didn't score enough runs, and the bullpen failed them once again. But Roberto Osuna, I don't know. You don't know, and he's now had multiple saves blown. Now, look, he didn't blow the previous three games for the Stros, which were all losses. In those three games, the offense combined for just five runs and 20 hits and only one home run. And the entire output during Wednesday's game was courtesy of Michael Brantley, who hit his 11th home run, which scored Alex Bregman. But if you have a strong pitching performance and you're in a tight game, you need your bullpen to be able to close the door. I mean, the first batter he faced, working with a 2-1 lead, he gave up a double to left center. He seemed to have recovered, though, striking out the next two batters. And you're like, okay, he's throwing 98. He's going to get the job done. Just needed one more out. Would have got the win, avoided the sweep. But then he gave up a single to left field. And then the wheels just came off. The Astros bullpen, though, is still pretty good. It was ranked third in ERA at 3.54. But they have had eight blown saves, which is the sixth best in the American League. So we'll see if there's cause for concern there moving forward.
We'll talk about that with our next guest, James Yasko, co-host of the Lehman Time Time podcast. He'll be joining us after this break right here on RP3 and Company on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to the show. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. In the last segment, we were talking about the Houston Astros dropping their fourth straight game. First time this season that's occurred. Roberto did not have himself a game to remember. He's blown a few saves this year, and it comes with the territory. But we'll dive in if that's a cause for concern with our next guest. He's the co-host of the wildly popular Lima Time Time podcast, which covers all things Stros. It's our good friend. He joins us every Thursday, the one and only James Yasko. James, how are you doing this morning?
Hey, not too bad. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. So let's start off with Roberto, because the guy has terrific stuff, and the majority of the time he's on, but he's had four blown saves so far this year. He had another one last night. Is there any concern from you about Roberto continuing being the guy who's going to be shutting the door, closing things out for the Astros?
Not really. It's kind of what you mentioned. Like, it just comes with the territory that sometimes, you know, and it took a decent amount for the Reds to actually come back and win that game. Osuna let the first guy on, struck the next two out, and then it took a really weird play from Michael Brantley that we're not really used to seeing, and there was maybe a mix-up at home plate between Stubbs and Osuna. Like, it was just weird, and sometimes that crap happens, and it's not fun to get swept, but kind of like what you mentioned, we're almost halfway through the season, and they've just lost their fourth game in a row, and that's the season high. So, I mean, yeah, I'd like to get on everyone that's hurt. I'd like them to come back. But you're going to have games and series like that.
We're talking with James Yasko of the Lima Time Time podcast here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. James, I want to talk Verlander. He's been sensational this year. He was 9-2 entering not yesterday's game, but the game 2 days ago. But he's given up a considerable amount of home runs for some reason. But they're usually, and you and I have talked about this on the show, they're usually all solo shots, and that's what the case was 2 days ago.
Right.
All the home runs are solos. It's a quirky little thing that here's a guy who's probably the front runner for the American League Cy Young as it stands right now in June, pitching lights out, probably having one of the best seasons of his career, and yet there's that interesting kind of quirky stat of, well, he's given up a lot of home runs, but they're only solo shots. What do you make of that?
It's not even that MLB is denying it, but the balls are wound tighter. They're juiced. And, you know, the Dietrich's homer that he hit 2 days ago, whichever one that was, it left the bat at 88 miles an hour. Like, that's not a home run swing. I mean, you know, Alvarez is out here tattooing balls at 114 miles an hour. You know, so when you're a guy that, like Verlander, who likes to attack hitters and likes to pound strikes and stay in the strike zone, if the ball is wound that tight that you can give up a home run that comes off the bat at 88, then it's just one of those things. And, you know, I think he even said after the game, you know, the goal used to be, you know, miss the barrel of the bat. Like, do not throw the ball where a guy can get the barrel on it. Well, now it doesn't matter. If you can get a bat on it, there's a chance that it can go out. You know, the Aspen, Garrett Cole is kind of the same way. You know, has allowed a decent number of home runs, and I think it has everything to do with how they attack hitters and that the balls are different.
Talking with James Yasko of the Lima Time Time podcast here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. James, Jose Altuve made his returns to the lineup. I was surprised. I thought they would have him out there maybe in a pinch-hitting capacity and kind of ease him into it. But there he was in the starting lineup fielding, and he goes 0 for 4. I don't care about him going for 0 for 4. It's going to take him a while to shake off the rust. I don't care how many practice swings he had and how much time he spent in during his rehab assignment. He's going to need time. It's going to take weeks for him, but maybe even a month, to get back to being Jose Altuve. But how good is it that the Strohs were able to get him back and they're going to insert him back into the lineup prior to the All-Star break?
I think it's huge. You know, I think that, that he brings a presence to the lineup, and have it, you want to have him in the game. Because if you have Jose Altuve in the game, then you don't have Jack Mayfield in the game, and nothing against Jack Mayfield. But it's got to feel, you know, as the offense has scuffled a little bit lately, it's got to feel good to look over at second base and see Altuve if you're an Astro and think, okay, you know, we're going to weather this little injury storm here, hopefully. So I think, you know, more than anything, it sort of makes a statement to the rest of the team, like, hey, you know, we're starting to get guys back now, and things are going to be okay.
Altuve is already back. It was announced yesterday that Springer Dinger, he's headed to his rehab assignment. I think it's today in Corpus Christi. That's the AA ball club down there. How long do you expect Springer to be down in the minors for his rehab assignment before he rejoins the big league club?
I think it sort of depends on that hamstring, and I honestly did not think we'd see Springer before the All-Star break.
Really?
It's just the way that, and not that I'm not a Twitter doctor or anything like that. You know, I'm not diagnosing injuries from Twitter, but just the way with the lead that they had, with the way that it looked, and especially as you know, he hurt that hamstring his first game back after missing 4 or 5 days with a sore back. I thought they'd be overly cautious with him. But it may be that their hand is forced a little bit. It depends on how he responds. You know, kind of like what you thought. I thought Altuve would be on his rehab assignment a little bit longer than he was. It could be 4 days. It could be a week. It could be 10 days, 2 weeks, who knows.
But regardless, James, the fact that they're getting Altuve and Springer back before the All-Star break, that's a huge win for the Astros.
Absolutely. And those guys are rested. I mean, I know they were working hard, but they Springer's been out for, 3 weeks? You know, basically, Altuve was out for 5. That's 20 and 30 games that they didn't have to play. And so, you know, that saves you. That's basically, you've just bought yourself a long postseason run.
We're talking with James Yasko of the Lima Time podcast here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. James, I know we've brought him up a ton, and I just can't. Brantley, is there a possibility that – is there any way – because I don't know the inner workings of the front office there with the Astros and how they do things. But, man, Brantley has – you could make the argument that he has outplayed the contract that the Astros have given him. Is there any possible way that – do they just let this go throughout the season, or do you think they try to do something, they like Brantley enough that they try to lock him up and give him a deal to stay and not even test free agency because he is playing at such a high level?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. I think the way that this front office operates, you know, they gave him a 2-year deal. So this is the first year of that deal. Given his injury history, I don't think they go ahead and lock him up this year. You know, but if he's still playing like this towards, you know, the All-Star break of 2020, then I think there's a chance, but also, you know, they let Marwin, you know, go to free agency, and that guy was as beloved by a fan base as anybody. And so, you know, with Tucker, you know, down in AAA, hitting a ton of home runs, you know, obviously he's unproven. Brantley is proven, but I think all of that depends on is Brantley able to put together 2 healthy seasons.
So they're going to take more of a wait and see approach and see if he can actually stay healthy.
Yeah, I mean, there's no reason not to. I mean, you've already given him his money for this year and next year, and so, you know, let's see. It's paid off so far. Let's see if it has paid off a year from now.
We're talking with James Yasko of the Lima Time podcast right here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. James, they get back to work. There is part of this road trip of theirs. First Cincinnati, they get swept. Now they have to go play at the Yankees starting tonight, so not even a day off of rest. They go right into it. traveling from Cincinnati over to New York. This is not the same Yankees team that they faced and that they swept earlier this season. They're getting healthy as well. What do you expect out of this four-game set with the Yanks?
I think the Yankees are going to remember that they came to Houston and got. But in the same way, and I think we even talked about it after that Yankee series, like no one's going to look in October and be like, but the Astros swept the Yankees back in April or whatever it was. And I think that, the way that it all worked out, the Astros got the Yankees when they were mostly injured. And it's looking like, the Yankees are going to get, they're going to get some payback on that, as the Astros are, somewhat banged up. So, it's going to be, it's always fun series. I think Jordan Alvarez is going to hit 15 home runs in the next four games because of that, that short porch out in the outfield. And if he doesn't, then it's time to send him back to AAA.
James, I have to ask you, I know your bread and butter is the Astros, but I have to ask you a little bit about the Rockets. National reports were like, there's all this infighting. They don't get along. Chris Paul and James Harden don't get along, blah, blah, blah. They're tearing apart, and there's going to be a rebuild and a trade. And Daryl Morey has to come out to the local media there in Houston, and particularly the Houston Chronicle beat writers, and say, no, nothing's going on. Chris Paul has not requested a trade. We're not trading Chris Paul. He's still going to be a Rocket and everything like that. Do you, as just a fan, not someone who knows the ins and outs of this team, but just as a fan, are you surprised that these rumors are swirling around the Rockets right now?
Not really. I wonder, and I wonder this across sports, but all of these, reports that come out that this player is unhappy, this player wants a trade, how many of those reports come from actual other GMs that are trying to capitalize on the chaos of free agency or the Rockets who, got bounced by the Warriors again? I guess for a fan who keeps somewhat of a distance, to the Rockets, it's frustrating. If I was as big a Rockets fan as I was an Astros fan, I'd be frustrated that that's what they have to spend time addressing and worrying about right now. It's frustrating apparently, but CP3 is going on Instagram and saying like, this is news to me. It seems like it's chaos for chaos' sake.
Well, James, speaking of chaos, you have to tell us. Your co-host for the Lima Time podcast is Patrick McClellan. Is he a handful? Yeah. You can tell us now. He's not listening.
Is he a handful? It's one of those things that, I have a couple of topics in mind every time we record, but I quit trying to lead a conversation somewhere. The podcast goes, it's a totally organic, it's Crunchy Mom podcast. It's foul, and it's not for little ears, and that's all Patrick's fault. I would keep it, there are a couple of episodes where I popped off a couple times, but I quit trying to make notes on which direction the podcast should go, just because he's not gonna. It's not gonna happen. It's gonna go wherever it wants to go, and so there's no point in trying to prevent that from happening.
You're just along for the ride, is what you're saying, brother.
I'm trying to keep at least one wheel on as the other wheels pop off. Yes.
Oh, James, keep up the great work. When's the next time the new podcast drops, and where can people go grab it, man?
Get it. We recorded Monday, but had some issues getting it uploaded, so it was up last night. So you can, if you want to pretend like the Red Series never even happened, we do, because we recorded it before the Red Series was actually played. Then you can hear us talk a lot about the starting pitcher from the Blue Jays from Sunday, and the story about when I sent pictures of my dog's genital to the wrong number.
Nice. James, appreciate you making time for us as always, brother. Enjoy your weekend, and we'll talk to you next week.
Hey, sounds good. Thanks.
It's James Yasko.
For a split second, I thought that last part he said daughters. I'm realizing now he said dogs.
Dogs.
Yeah.
Dogs.
There was a split second in my mind where things were going way out of whack. Woo!
It's James Yasko with the Lima Time podcast, breaking down all things Astros for us. Right here on RP3 and Company. We got to hit a break, but when we come back, we will wrap up hour number two
right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to the show. You're listening to Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network, 24 hours of sports coverage. You can also find us on LUS Fiber, 133 and 1133 in high definition. If you want to give us a call, like Doug did earlier, pick up the phone. Dial the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. 337-706-0111. If you pay the toll man correctly, Cody Schutz, he'll let you on the air. Just saying. Coming up, lead off the third hour at 8:02, Les East from CrescentCitySports.com will be joining us, helping us preview draft night for the New Orleans Pelicans, how the Memphis trade of sending Mike Conley Jr. to Utah affects what the Pels will be able to do now with the number 4 overall pick. And we'll dissect, also get his thoughts on the Michael Thomas contract negotiations as well. But right now, it's time for Cody Schutz to shine bright, take center stage on the show, because it's time for him to talk Women's World Cup.
That is right. The Women's World Cup is still in full swing. Yesterday, the original land of the American people, England, getting a 2-0 win over Japan. I always, when I see England play, I always like, hey, we should cheer for England. We should go England, right? But the United States women are going to play their third and final group stage match today. That is going to start at 2 p.m., and it will be undoubtedly their toughest group stage match so far. They're playing I don't want to talk bad about Thailand or Chile, but a very formidable nation in Sweden will be their opponent today. United States, obviously, they're ranked better than everybody, so they're going to be favored to win the game. But Sweden, a very formidable opponent for the United States women's team, so we should see the best game that we've seen so far. United States shouldn't really have a problem, still should win handily.
Won the group stage, though? They've already moved on to the round of 16, right?
They've already moved on, but okay. They haven't, because Sweden's in second place. Sweden is 2-0 as well. The United States is 2-0. But the United States has the goal differential by like 16 or something like that because they scored 13 against. So the United States is in first place. But if by some way or chance Sweden wins outright, it doesn't matter if it's 1-0 or 50-0. If Sweden wins, they win the group because you'll get 3 points for the win and the United States only get 1 point for the loss.
So do we know if USA wins, who would they face in the round of 16?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that the Group F winner will play. I'm trying to find what group is in. Yes, we'll play the Group A second place team, which right now is Norway. So it looks like, yeah, that group is done. So it looks like if you win.
So USA's got some competition coming from the Scandinavian countries.
Right. If you win Group F, you will play either, it looks like, Norway or France, the host country. France won their group. Norway finished in second. So you'll probably play one of those two nations, depending on how things work out.
Yes, but if USA loses today to the Swedes,
they'll play one of those other teams.
They'll have to play France.
Right. It's either France or Norway, depending on how.
So if they win, they get to play the runner-up out of the other group in the round of 16.
I'm pretty sure that's how it works.
And then it becomes single elimination, right, Cody?
Right.
Once we get to the round of 16?
It goes to the knockout stage, I believe is what they call it. But yeah, Group F, which is what the United States is in, is paired with Group A. And then there's also, I think there's a couple of at-large teams, if you will. So like, just if you don't win your group, I think there's still a way. It's either one or two countries can still get in. But
will there be, the most important question out of this entire segment.
Right.
Is that, will there be a Women's World Cup watch party held at the Schutz residence later today?
If I can get home by 2 o'clock, yeah. May have to start the viewing party on the trip home. But as soon as I make it to my house, yes, absolutely.
Nice, nice. Refreshments? Some snacks, maybe?
Probably.
I'm just trying to invite myself.
Oh, okay.
That's what I'm trying to do here.
String cheese
for
all.
I already have that at the house. I have a 4-year-old.
Fair enough.
That's going to do it for hour number two.
2 o'clock kickoff.
That's going to do it for hour number two of RP3 and Company. When we come back, we'll talk to Les East of CrescentCitySports.com right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Live and local, we are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Raging Cajun legend Brian Mitchell.
My dream was always to play in the NFL, so having an opportunity was the main thing I needed.
LSU College World Series hero Warren Morris.
I don't get tired of talking about it. You know, if people remember me for that home run and winning that championship, I think that's great.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Good morning and welcome to hour number three of RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network, 24 hours of sports coverage. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. We led off today's show talking about Zion Williamson and how he interacted with the media, the questions that he was able to answer. He seemed to be very humble. He seemed to be very candid as well. I love the fact that he said the toughest coach in his life was his mama, and that he named the three idols of his. He gave the reasons why. It was LeBron James, because he lived up to the expectations, the lofty expectations that were put on him. He loved Russell Westbrook because of his competitive nature and the fire that he had. And then he also loved Kawhi Leonard because he was the silent assassin. I like all that. I also love the fact that he said, those won't be my idols when I get to the league. I love the confidence. There's also humility there. And despite the national media reports early on after the Pelicans won the draft lottery that, you know, Zion Williamson should go back to Duke and Zion Williamson should go somewhere else and he doesn't want to go to New Orleans, it sure does seem to be that this young man, is very genuine about becoming a New Orleans Pelican. And we'll dive deeper into that with our next guest. He covers the New Orleans Saints and the New Orleans Pelicans for CrescentCitySports.com. It's the one of the best in the business, our good friend, Les East. Les, good morning. How are you doing this morning?
Doing well, Raymond. Thanks. How are you?
I'm doing well. My first question to you is, do you go through some type of conditioning today to prepare for the draft? Is there some type of routine that Les East goes through to get himself mentally prepared and physically prepared for the long night that is ahead?
I do two things right now. I'm eating drinking a power smoothie to give me some energy for the rest of the day. And the other thing I do is I avoid watching ESPN until the last possible moment. You know, when you went through those questions that Zion answered, did he answer which team he wants to sign with as soon as he's able to escape New Orleans years from now? Because I'm sure that must have been asked by somebody.
I'm sure someone from the mothership made sure to put that in there. We're talking with the award-winning columnist, writer for CrescentCitySports.com, Les East, here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. So, Les, we know it's going to be a done deal. Zion's going to be taken number one overall. He's going to become the face of this franchise for the Pels. But they had some flexibility there with the number four overall pick that they received from the Los Angeles Lakers as part of the Anthony Davis trade, which cannot be finalized until July 6. How much does what Memphis did yesterday, trading Mike Conley Jr. to the Utah Jazz, receiving three players and picks in return, affect what New Orleans can do now with that number four overall pick and shopping it around?
Well, I don't know if it affects things a whole lot. I mean, this has been all along a draft that's thought to have three elite players and then a little bit of a drop-off. So that four spot is still kind of, I don't want to say no man's land, because you can still get a very good player there, but it's still a spot that the consensus says is a little bit in a different league than those first three picks.
So I think that's the main thing that's driving what the Pelicans may or may not be able to get with that pick. It may have brought some clarity to what's going to happen above them, but I think that was pretty well known or assumed what those first three picks are going to be. So, you know, I still think the Pelicans are looking at all three options. I think their fallback option is to use the pick. I think their preference would be to trade it either for an all-star caliber player or possibly to trade down and pick up additional picks. But they're also looking at, I think, the way the trade affects them is maybe it gives them a little more clarity as to who will be there if they wind up utilizing the fourth pick. And, of course, even if they utilize the pick, we don't know if they're utilizing it for themselves or as part of some trade that will not have yet been announced when they make the pick.
We're talking with Les East of CrescentCitySports.com here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Les, other teams are going to be, reports are very aggressive. Atlanta seems to be kind of the leader in the clubhouse there with wanting to trade up. Tons of media reports are coming out, even locally there in the Atlanta area, that the Hawks are being aggressive. They want to trade up. They tried to trade with the New York Knicks at 3, giving up an 8 and the 10 and something else. The Knicks declined. Is that something that the Pels would entertain, since they're, you know, you have the drop-off after the top three guys? And if there's not that much of a difference between the guys taking 4 and 5 and the guys taking at 9 and 10, could you see Griffin saying, okay, well, here you go, Atlanta, here's the number 4, give us both 8 and 10 and maybe another pick next year?
Yeah, I think Atlanta is one of the more likely trade partners. They have so many assets with, I believe, 3 number ones this year, all reasonably high. They can obviously put together a good package of picks to move up. And, they're a team that I think was encouraged by the way some of their young players played last year, and they think they're on the move and are probably figuring that if they can get the fourth or fifth player, or they try to get the third player, as you mentioned, from the Knicks, if they can get one of the best players in this draft, that might get them over the hump and into the playoffs. And they have the assets to make that happen rather than staying where they are and adding 2 or 3 other players and not getting a really elite player. So I can see how they want to use those assets to get higher in the draft. And the Pelicans may be looking to do just the opposite and pick up multiple players. So I think there's a lot of potential for something to happen between the Pelicans and the Hawks, because I think their interests with the assets they have are different and they fit together nicely in a potential trade. The wild card in all this is, you know, we're going with the consensus about the draft. And all it takes is David Griffin and the Pelicans personnel people to have a slightly different take on this. And maybe they have somebody in mind at number 4 who they don't think is that big a drop-off, and the pick becomes more attractive to them. Or maybe they have somebody else in mind that they can't get at 8 or 9. So you never know if an individual team's rankings are a little bit different from the consensus, and that – and their thinking may be a little bit different than what we think is obvious.
We're talking with Les East of CrescentCitySports.com here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Les, I do kind of like that thinking, because there may be a guy that they really love. And we know, we've heard the reports that there are rumors that they were trying to maybe pair up Zion with R.J. Barrett and maybe moving up to 2 to take R.J. Barrett. But I don't know. I just feel like I would not be surprised if they trade the number 4 pick tonight for multiple picks or for a player, or if they just stay pat and take the guy that they want. Like, I wouldn't be surprised, because here's the thing. This is just, in a lot of ways, lanyap. They're getting Zion at 1, right? And they got the future picks from the Lakers, too. And they got 3 players from the Lakers. So there's not as much pressure on them with this number four pick, and they can have some flexibility here and maybe take a flyer on a guy that they really like, that maybe really interviewed really well with them during the draft process.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I'm not sure it makes a whole lot of difference to them among the three options. Like you said, I don't know if there's a lot of pressure on them. My sense is that the pick is the fullback position, and that they're going to get a good young player at number four, no matter who they have targeted there. So that's the worst they're going to do is hit the fourth player in the draft. That's a pretty good position to be in. Because of teams like Atlanta and others, there's a possibility of, in Phoenix and Chicago apparently are interested in the point guard from Vanderbilt at four, so they may be willing to pay a pretty good price to get up there. So they could parlay that into multiple picks. But I think their preference would be to add a young all-star, because if you look at this reported trade with Anthony Davis, they got six assets from the Lakers, and they're all good assets, but three of them are draft choices, so we don't even know who the individuals are. None of the three players they got, even though there's a lot of talent there and a lot of potential there, none of them are yet all-star caliber players, Brandon Ingram being the closest. So, they're giving up a six-time all-star who's only 26 years old, and they don't yet have an all-star caliber player to show for that, even though they have a lot of assets. So I think getting that all-star caliber veteran, if they were able to do that in a package that includes the number four pick, would be their preference as they try and put together a team that can be a playoff contender this year, even with an eye toward gradually building toward a championship team, which they're not going to be able to do overnight, even with Zion.
So, Les, with that being said, then I guess Bradley Beal and trying to get him would be kind of on tops of the list.
Yeah, I think that would make a lot of sense. Now, it looks like the last report I saw was that Washington was preparing to make him some max contract offer. And so they're making a push to get him to sign. But, that would make a lot of sense. That's the type of player I think they would like to add, because, I think the preference is to have another all-star caliber veteran to pair with Drew Holiday as the leaders right now for this young team and get them into the playoffs right away and experience that and accelerate the development of a young group that you see as potentially championship contenders in 3, 4, 5 years. So I think that's kind of the tightrope they're trying to walk, is to get a lot better right now and not just play with a bunch of teenagers, but nonetheless stay young enough that you blossom into this championship contender sooner than you would without having some veteran leadership aside from just Drew Holiday.
We're talking with Les East of CrescentCitySports.com here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Les, could the Pels, I think Al Horford may be a little too long in the tooth for them to make a run at, now that he's parting ways with Boston, he's going to test free agency. Could they make a run at someone like Chris Middleton, who opted out and he's now an unrestricted free agent, the young man that played with the Milwaukee Bucks?
Yeah, I think that would be a possibility. We haven't even spent a whole lot of time talking about, and no one has really, about free agency, just because there's so many possibilities, so many options out there potentially related to the draft. So what the things that could still happen in free agency are very much on the table, and what they do in the draft if they trade this number four pick could have salary cap implications, which create opportunities for them in free agency as well. And certainly Chris Middleton is a good young player who could fill that hole that they're looking to fill in a move that wouldn't necessarily or wouldn't take place as part of this draft night. So there are all kinds of possibilities. And my advice to you tonight is to bring a number two pencil with a fresh eraser because I don't know if there's a whole lot you're going to be able to write in ink, because this is going to be a very fluid event tonight and carrying over into free agency over the next several days.
Les, one final question, and it's not about the Pels, it's about the Saints. Reports have been coming out that Mickey Loomis, Jeff Ireland, and the rest of the brain trust with the Saints are trying to negotiate a long-term contract for star wide receiver Michael Thomas. Reports are that they're okay making him the highest-paid wide receiver in the game, around $20 million per season. Your thoughts on that and them trying to make the deal, get it done before training camp?
Yeah, I think that's the goal, and I think that's likely to happen, and I think it's the smart thing. You know, Mike Thomas, one of the things that makes him such a good player is he has a real chip on his shoulder that drives him on a daily basis, and he feels disrespected in a lot of degrees and in a lot of ways, and I think that's tied to the fact that he feels like he's underpaid, which he is based on his performance. He's outperformed his initial contract. And so I think it's a matter of pride for him to be the highest paid wide receiver. And he probably deserves it given his age and his productivity so far. And the longer you wait to lock him up long term, the more the potential for the market to drive that price up. So I think the sooner they get him locked up as the number, as the highest paid wide receiver in the NFL, the cheaper it will be to do that, even though it's going to cost a lot of money. And he's a guy they need to keep long-term. So I think they're rightfully focused on that right now, and I think there's a good chance it gets done right before the start of training camp here in about a month.
Les, appreciate your time as always. Looking forward to hanging out with you tonight down there for the Pelicans draft extravaganza. You continue having a tremendous day, conditioning yourself, training, getting prepared for what will occur tonight, which, as you told us, will be a lot of things that you can't really put in writing with a pen.
Be sure and hydrate, Raymond.
Thank you, Les. That's Les, Les East. Thanks. From CrescentCitySports.com joining us here on RP3 and Company. We got to hit a break, but we'll be back. Rawlings made their announcements for their Gold Glove winners for college baseball yesterday. Yeah, an LSU guy got one, but he wasn't the only player from a Louisiana college that was rewarded a Gold Glove. Three of them in total. We'll talk about it next on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana Sports Station. Just had a terrific conversation with Les East of CrescentCitySports.com concerning the New Orleans Pelicans, what they'll be doing during tonight's draft. And Les's recommendation is don't write anything down in pen. After Zion is selected, everything else is an absolute crapshoot. So that's my advice to you, too, as well. Broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. I want to take a moment, talk a little college baseball. We're going to do that in the next two segments. College World Series recap, give you the dates, because we had a lot of games yesterday because of weather. We'll dive all into that in the next segment at 8:32. Right now, I want to talk about some awards that were handed out. Rawlings always hands out their Gold Glove Awards every year. And Zach Watson from LSU, the star outfielder, center fielder, first pick of the third round of the Major League Baseball Amateur Draft. He earned a Gold Glove for the second straight year. He was named to the ABCA Rawlings NCAA Division I Gold Glove team. But he wasn't the only player from the state of Louisiana, or rather, that plays for a team in the state of Louisiana. Of the nine players that earned gold gloves from Rawlings and ABCA yesterday, three of them play for Louisiana schools. Three. That means a third. I told there'd be no math, but I'm pretty sure that's a third. Yes, Cody?
Yeah, 33.333 repeating percent.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. All that math tutoring really paid off for me. The other two gentlemen that received honors, second baseman Salo Aiza from UNO, the junior, given the Privateers a gold glove winner, and joining him in the infield from the state of Louisiana, Carson Maxwell, the senior third baseman from McNeese State. So Louisiana schools took up three of the nine spots on the ABCA Rawlings Division I Gold Glove team. The boot represent.
The boot, apparently, a glove.
Yeah, bravo, bravo. Other winners, catcher Adley Rushman, one of the top picks in the draft, the catcher out of Oregon State. Gabe Matthews was at first base, junior out of Oregon. We already talked about Aiza and Maxwell from UNO and McNeese State. Shortstop was Cam Shepard out of Georgia. Zach Weatherford was one of the outfielders out of Wright State in Ohio. Josh Litchfield, Charleston Southern. Got the other outfield position. Of course, Zach Watson. And then the pitcher, Steve Fiji from Bryant.
That's go, right. Go Bulldogs.
Go Bulldogs. Pride of Rhode Island. So congratulations to Zach Watson from LSU, Carson Maxwell from McNeese State, and Salo Aiza from UNO for earning Rawlings gold gloves. Congratulations to those young men in those programs. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, we're heading to Omaha. Time to talk College World Series right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. That was longtime skipper of the Florida State Seminoles baseball program, Mike Martin, after his team was eliminated from the College World Series last night in an elimination game. Texas Tech beat Florida State 4-1. Seminoles go home. Martin wraps up a 40-year career, the winningest coach in college baseball history, numerous trips to the College World Series, but never won the whole thing. The Cinderella story of Florida State comes to an end last night there in Omaha, but a tremendous career and one of the best guys and a great ambassador for the game of college baseball. So where do we stand right now? We got five teams left. Three have already been eliminated. Two of those are from the SEC. Arkansas was the first to go home. They were 0-2 and barbecued. Woo, pig-suey. They were sent home on Monday. Auburn was eliminated yesterday. Play was suspended on Tuesday due to weather. Louisville, Auburn played their game, wrapped it up yesterday early. Louisville defeats Auburn 5-3. The Tigers get sent home packing. Texas Tech sent Florida State home. But in the marquee game, which ended up not being quite as close or as exciting as you'd hoped, Vandy beat Mississippi State 6-3. So where does that leave us? We got one game today in Omaha. Elimination game, Louisville versus Mississippi State. That'll be at 8 p.m. Then you go to Friday, Michigan, who is the Cinderella story of this. They were one of the final four teams put into the baseball tournament, into the postseason. They won the regional, they won the super regional, and they're undefeated so far in Omaha at the College World Series. The Wolverines will take on Texas Tech on Friday at 2 o'clock. Vandy, meanwhile, will play afterwards, and they will await the winner of tonight's game between Louisville and Mississippi State. And then things get kind of crazy because Michigan and Vandy haven't lost yet, so if they lose on Friday, then it gets all jumbled up and everything like that. So Saturday's games are really only necessary because if Vandy wins Friday and Michigan wins Friday, well, there's no game to be played on Saturday. Both of those teams advance to the finals to face each other for the best two out of three. So, Cody, you love the college baseball.
Oh, yeah.
Your team didn't make it. We're eliminated by Florida State. They've now been eliminated.
Yep.
Two of the four SEC teams that made it to Omaha have now since been eliminated.
Right.
But you still got Vandy. They are just mowing people.
Yep.
Who do you like with the teams that are remaining? Once again, Louisville, Mississippi State play an elimination game tonight. But then there's undefeated Michigan still. Texas Tech. They'll face each other on Friday. And then Vandy is still left.
I mean, I still like Vandy. Whenever we discussed this, when the College World Series first started, I said I wanted to see Florida State win, but I thought we would see Vanderbilt win. And that's still kind of where I sit. As much as I wanted to see Mike Martin and the Seminoles go on to win the whole thing, that obviously didn't happen. Vanderbilt's still sitting pretty, though. Mm-hmm. And I thought from the beginning that they would be the team to win this, and they still look like they're a formidable team. I think Mississippi State is going to stick around a little bit longer too. I think they're just
you think the Dogs are going to stave off elimination, beat Louisville tonight, and then move on to play Vandy again.
Right, because if I understand, this is Louisville's second elimination game. Right, they already played in one elimination
right.
game and won.
Right,
this is Mississippi State's first elimination game, so you would think rest and pitching and bullpen would be in the favor of the Bulldogs. So I would think Mississippi State would move on. I still think Vanderbilt is going to win the whole thing. And since we're talking about Vanderbilt right now, an interesting development with, you may know the name, you probably don't, Preacher Franklin. That name mean anything to you?
First of all, sounds awesome. No, it does not mean anything.
Preacher Franklin is a 72-year-old man. He is a diehard, as you call me all the time, Vanderbilt Commodores fan.
Did you just call him the Commodores?
I do. That's from my dad. My dad did my entire life growing up, and it just happens. I'm sorry.
Oh, pick it on the smart guys.
Right, basically. But you may know him better as the Vandy Whistler.
Oh.
That guy.
They silenced him, didn't they?
Well, that's kind of what I'm getting at. He said he's been going to Vanderbilt sporting events for about 15 years and whistling at every single one of them. For the first time ever, he says, on Sunday, he was approached by TD Ameritrade Park officials and told to stop whistling or risk being thrown out. Now, turn around, Franklin. He says he's, what word did he use? He is conflicted over what he should do for the rest of this tournament because he drove 780 miles to go to Omaha, and he doesn't want to watch the rest of the College World Series from his hotel room. But then he has a quote here from the Vandy Whistler saying, legally, I don't see how they can shut me up. I kind of
really,
agree
dude?
With him. I kind of agree with him. Yeah, I understand the ticket says, you know, the ticket may say you're subject to being thrown out for whatever. But then it goes on.
Right to refuse service.
Right. But he also says, and he makes a valid point here in another quote, they're making their own rules as they go. I think they ought to leave me alone. There's a valid point to that.
The rest of the nation wishes that he would shut up.
Yeah, but you know how we rip on people all the time for complaining and being babies and this and that? That's what people are doing to this guy. They're just complaining a lot.
But so is he.
Well, he's complaining after they told him to stop because other people were complaining.
You still get the privilege of watching the College World Series and possibly watching your team that you claim
right.
that you ride and die for.
But you're not allowed to cheer.
He can cheer. He just doesn't have to do the annoying whistling thing that affects the radio broadcast and the TV broadcast.
See, I disagree. And it's okay that we disagree. But I just disagree with that. Cheering is cheering. As long as he's not cursing or you know, being profane, I think, I don't know. I mean, obviously, TD Ameritrade or the College World Series, whoever's, you know, making this decision, they feel like...
probably a joint discussion
right.
was had.
Yeah, they
probably.
Feel like they have the right to do this, which they very well may have. Another quote here from the Vandy Whistler. He says, I have a lawyer that called me. So apparently the lawyer contacted him. And he says, he's a good friend of mine. He says, go on and whistle. If they throw you out, we'll sue them. I said, I don't know, man. I want to watch the game. So he's having people egg him on to continue to whistle to see what happens. I think this lawyer's probably a little advantageous there, because if they throw him, they're not going to throw him out without knowing they have some sort of, I don't want to call it airtight, but with some sort of certainty that they're going to be okay. But I just think it's funny. I think it's a funny story. There's a fan being told to stop cheering because it annoys other fans.
It would be, but see, I view it differently, because what he's doing, I don't care that he disrupts the other fans around him. I don't care about that.
Okay.
What I care about is that he's interrupting the broadcast that's going out to millions of other people when they're trying to watch the game,
he's
and they don't want to listen to
whistling. Interrupting anything. He is. He could be a bit of annoyance in the broadcast. He's not interrupting it.
When you hear the whistle over the guy talking or the color commentator talking, like I just think, okay, if you're going to whistle, just don't do it by the broadcast booth. That'd be my thing. But like, okay, well, if you want to,
I don't even know if that would help him though. He's so loud. I don't know if moving anywhere.
Well, I just feel like he could be down like the third base line. That's my thing. I don't care that if it bothers someone else. Now, if I'm sitting, I'm just going to be real for a minute. We're going to be real. We're going to have a real conversation here real quick. If I'm sitting and that cat keeps whistling, the younger version of RP3 would have very well have taken that whistle away from that man.
Okay, here you go. Look at that. As I,
I'm just saying, because that would have grated my nerves. But if he's allowed, you know, if there's nothing like that, I just don't want the broadcast to be interrupted. And it feels like he does the whistling to put the focus. And that's my other thing. He's putting the focus on himself, not the team. Like, he's making it about him. He's got his nickname. It feels branding. It feels very LaVar Ball-esque to me.
Right, and they
it feels more
say,
about him than it does the team.
Well, in this, it says that he is he's somewhat of a celebrity at Vanderbilt games, and he's frequently getting stopped to pose for pictures.
There you go.
He said he meant to behave on Wednesday, but before the game, he couldn't help himself. He chirped and then started to show off a little bit, doing a little whistle there. That was the last time he was at the park. He did say, though, that he came to a sort of an understanding with the stadium official, and now he will only whistle when Vanderbilt does something good.
Okay.
The way the Commodores played Wednesday in their 6-3 victory, he might be whistling all weekend. That's a little caveat there from the writer. I guess some Engdahl is the last name here of the tournament official for TD Ameritrade. He says, quote, we're happy to work with him. I think our goal was to find a happy medium, and I think we left today feeling like we did. So it sounds like they have come to an agreement. He's going to whistle when Vandy gets a hit, scores, makes a great play in the field.
Right. Cheer on the team. Don't make it about yourself.
But he won't whistle. The entire game.
Right. Don't try to make yourself get your own 30 for 30 because you whistle at ball games. I don't care.
He's been doing it for 15 years. You're ripping on this guy like it's all. We disagree on this topic.
Would you do this?
If I could whistle that loud, probably. I've been known to be
for 15 years and make it your brand and pose for pictures. You would do that? Cody Schutz would do that?
If somebody stopped me and was like, hey, you're the guy that whistles all the time. Take a picture with me. I'm not going to say no.
I think you're selling yourself a little short. I don't think. I think his motivation.
Have you ever heard of the Vandy Whistler before this year?
Yeah, last couple of years.
Really?
Well, yeah, because Vandy's been good, so they've been more prominent. So he's become more of a thing this year.
He's been
something
doing
happened
it for
one of the games.
Years. He's been doing it for 15 years, and this is the first I've heard of him. Maybe this is you've heard of him before recently, but I mean. I don't, if he's doing that now, if it's all about him now, and it's me, I got to build my Whistler, Vandy Whistler brand, if that's what that is, then it is a very recent thing. There's no way this started 15 years ago with him saying, oh man, I'm going to go whistle at every game until people can know me and post
about me on social media.
No,
but I think he's taking advantage of it now.
Well, they made him a story, to be honest.
I mean, we could go back and forth. The people that wrote the story aren't the ones that are whistling.
Right, but why does a fan whistling merit a story being written about him?
I mean, that's a fair point, I guess. I mean, look, if you want to defend him,
it's a very weird situation.
I think it's a little. He's being self indulgent, and I just think, you know, talking about this attorney called me and said that we should sue and do all. Look. he's enjoying his time in the spotlight. Okay? Just like LeVar Ball does. Okay? So that's my thing. If you want to cheer on your team, that's fine. Cheer on your team. And it sounds like they came to an understanding where the ballpark's like, look, you don't have to stop your whistling. But I'd be willing to bet you if you looked over the years that his whistling has become more where this is a reset for him, I think. Like, they're telling him, like, hey, you can cheer when Vandy's doing something, right?
Right.
I think that's probably how it started for him, where that was his way of cheering on the Commodores, yeah, or as you call them, the Commodores.
Right.
But then it evolved into, oh, I'm going to do the whistling the whole time.
Right, right.
Right, and I think this is more of a reset in the park, in the College World Series. Like, look, cheer on Vandy. Can you just chill with the, you know.
But I don't have a problem with him being known as the Vandy Whistler, people wanting him to call himself the Vandy Whistler. I have no problem with that because I would be a fool to do that because I turn around and my favorite NFL team of all time has guys like the Whistle Monster and the Bless You Boys that dress up like the Pope every game. And the Saints have plenty of fans that have branded themselves. So I'm not going to rip this guy, because then I would have to, in turn, say that the Whistle Monster's stupid. And I think Whistle Monster is incredible. That giant helmet that looks like a whistle. I mean, come on. You can't do better than that. So that's just, I'm just trying to stay down the middle.
That's fine. I mean, I just think he can do his thing. That's fine.
But I like the
But he also can't complain. And here's the other thing. Take out the ballpark. But he also can't complain if an ornery fan that's in the stands with him.
Yeah, it's already happened.
Okay, and the ornery fan wants to flex up and be like, dude, I'm tired of hearing your damn whistling.
Well, that happened
he
in
He can't
Hoover.
Complain. Right.
That
he can't complain if you're going to put yourself out there.
Yeah.
And you're going to do this, and you know it's annoying. There's ramifications that come with that. Like, you can't, like, complain about it. You know that you're going to get pushback
right.
from just fans. I'm not even talking about the College World Series.
Right. Well,
I'm talking
why,
about other fans.
That's why in Hoover, when he did get confronted by an LSU fan, then the stadium officials found out he was sitting in the wrong seat, and then so he moved to a different seat. So, I mean, he has to know how to handle those situations, though. He must be approached, I don't want to say often, but at a lot of road games.
And that's my other little tidbit there. He was making sure to, on purpose, put himself in not his own seat at the SEC tournament just to do so.
Just to do it. You know how many people weren't in their right seat at the SEC tournament game?
I am stunned.
You have a vendetta against this guy.
I am stunned. A guy I don't even know.
Right.
I am stunned.
named preacher.
I am stunned that you are back. You are willing to go to war. You're willing to go to a dance battle over the Vandy Whistler. I love you for it, man.
It's for you. We've got our guy Charles. He's messaging me about, what about Whistle Monster? Charles, if you'd been listening 5 minutes ago, I brought that up already.
and the Pope and the Whistle Monster?
Yeah.
You don't hear them
on
the game.
They're on camera every game, almost going into every commercial
break.
They're
on camera.
Yeah. They're just as much of a brand as this guy. They're not as annoying, but they're just as much of a brand.
How's the Whistle Monster any different than the Mississippi State fans bringing in the cowbells?
They're not. He's not. So how is Mississippi State bringing in cowbells any different than the Vandy Whistler?
They're in. I think they're both annoying.
Well, they're both annoying, but, I mean, I don't think you can do anything about it.
I mean, there's
ways to do
it. You infringe on people's privacy.
I mean, you could. You absolutely could.
I like this discussion. I like this discussion today, Cody.
It's just an interesting.
Loves the Whistler.
I don't love the Whistler. I just don't.
I'm going to find you a shirt. He should start his own t-shirt business, which I'm sure is about to happen through his lawyer.
You're putting words in my mouth right now, and you're trying to make as if my message is something that it's not. And I'm going to let you do that because that's your prerogative. If that's how you want to treat things, so that's okay.
I actually agree with you. I just think he's more of a moron.
Oh, I wouldn't go have dinner with this guy. I wouldn't have a beer with him. But if in my
I'll ask you this. Would you get your picture taken with him?
At this point, yeah, but only because it's the novelty of it now, not because I like
it. You own it, all right?
But because of the novelty,
I can respect that. I can respect that.
But I think of the fact in 10 years, 15, 20 years from now, what if I decide I want to be that annoying fan? You know what I mean? I can't rip this guy now, and then they call me out on it. What if that ends up being me? What if I'm the LSU Whistler or something?
If that happens, then I will do the sit-down exclusive interview with you,
right? And you'll write the article, and then we'll have two other jabronis talk about it for 15 minutes.
Oh, I love it. That's my best segment of today. The best segment of the day. We got to hit a break. Got to pay the bills. But when we come back, we will wrap up things here on RP3 and Company on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. Tremendous show today. I want to thank our guest, John Marques from The Town Talk and thetowntalk.com. I want to thank James Yasko from the Lima Time Time podcast and our friend Les East from CrescentCitySports.com. I said during the break, the Vandy Whistler should create his own novelty whistle.
If it ever
And Vanderbilt should embrace it and sell it at games.
I mean, you're not wrong.
Right?
You're not wrong.
And then have the whole crowd whistle. And he could lead it like he's the band leader, right? Like he's the drum captain.
He's got to dress up some kind of way. Yeah, you can't.
Oh, he can wear a Commodore hat. The mascot's got an extra one somewhere, I'm sure, in the closet somewhere. See, I'm going to take it. I'm going to take it big.
You might as well. Might as well.
Love it. Love it.
I'm just going to whistle here all through Sport of Politics. The whole thing. I'm going to whistle the whole time.
Nice.
Go to break.
A reminder today, Jordy Hullberg show with Uncle Jordy from 2 to 4. It will be the best of the good brother Ben Love and Bumper to Bumper Sports from 4 to 5:30. That'll lead you into Astro launch and then 6:10 first pitch, Astros at Yankees. Keep it live and local right here. Sport of Politics is next on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game.